A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere. Haven,
concentrate on
Sim.
Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 85. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of the tripods. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
The tripods was a classic BBC children's sci-fi show. It was set 100 years after an alien invasion of the tripods, which are enormous three-legged robots, stand maybe 30 or 40 feet high. And of course, the tripods also had this dramatic idea of capping, where everyone after the age of roughly 16 or so is captured by a tripod and given a cap, which is like a mesh implant, triangular metal mesh implant that goes onto a person's skull. And into the person's skull, and at some level, controls that person's actions. We don't know exactly at what level.
That's right. And in the last episode, we talked about the first series of the tripods, which was based on the first novel, The White Mountains. And it followed the adventures of our three main protagonists, three teenage boys, Will, Henry, and Beanpole.
And it follows these three young teenage characters, Will, Henry, and Beanpole, as they escape the tripods and escape capping and travel through Europe to find the free men, men who are uncapped and apparently live in the White Mountains. So series one and book one was very much a journey story and what happens along the way, with lots of interesting little things happening along the way.
Yeah, it's an action-adventure story as our characters head towards the White Mountains to try and join the rebellion. And lots of incidents along the way to keep them busy. Not all of those incidents involving the tripods.
Yes, the threat of the tripods is always there, but we don't actually see very much of the tripods in Series 1. We see them a little bit here and there for a minute or two in each episode, often towering over the scene in the background and things like that. Series 1 had more of a BBC historical type look to it, because in this future, it's in 2089, so over 100 years in the future, but because of capping and how it takes away the inventiveness of people in an effort to make people less destructive and eliminate war, it does do that. It eliminates war, but capping also makes people not be inventive. So after society and technology was destroyed by the tripods, it was never rebuilt. So it's a pre-industrial type of society, and there's very much a BBC historical program type of look to it.
So then after that successful first series, the BBC produced a second series, which was in 1985, 12 episodes, and that was based on the second novel in the series, The City of Gold and Lead. And in it, Will and Henry and Beanpole have joined the rebels in the White Mountains, and they learn of the existence of a series of tournaments called the Games, and that these tournaments are run by the tripods to select young people who will enter their tripod city and act as slaves. And Will and another boy who we're introduced to called Fritz are successful in these games with wearing false caps under their hair, and are chosen to go and travel to the city, which we see as this futuristic dome. And as we talked about last time, we see much more of the detail of the city once they're inside it, based on the fabulous miniature that the BBC special effects department built.
Yes, in series two, we get a much more futuristic type of show because we're, for much of it, inside the city, which gives us some pretty interesting things in there. And of course, this idea that to the capped people, serving the tripods essentially as slaves is considered a great honor for them. So it sort of shows just how much people are subjugated. And we also meet the Masters, who are the alien race controlling the tripods. So once people go into the city, they find that they're not really serving the tripods, they're serving the Masters, who are the creatures that control the tripods, and they are the real rulers of Earth. And the humans and Will and Fritz dealing with the Masters takes up a fairly big chunk of the second series and sort of dealing with things there. And we also learn more about the history of the Masters and the tripods arriving on Earth and some of the future plans and what the Masters intend to do with Earth and what their plans for humanity are. And we get a large chunk of the second series being in the city. The first chunk is not, and the last chunk is not. But we have this, the city episodes, which are very effects heavy. So they contrast the first series, which was very historical looking, to this chunk of the second series being very effects heavy and very futuristic in its look.
And the characters of Henry and Beanpole very much take a back seat in the second series, don't they, Brian? We don't see a great deal of them.
Yes, that's right, because they don't actually enter the city. But we do see them a little more in the first chunk of the season and a little bit in the last chunk of the season as well.
Yeah. And as you say, we've got this switch from this sort of historical sort of feudal society from the first series to this very futuristic society in the Tripod series, Tripod City in the second series. So it's quite a turnaround for us in terms of the look of the show.
Yes, it's a big transition.
And then, of course, the third series was to have been the third novel, The Pool of Fire, but, as we shall find, didn't actually happen. As we said in our last episode, the Tripod series was quite a big budget production for the BBC. They had this large special effects budget and a very large cast as well, Brian. Over 120 speaking roles apparently listed. So quite a big effort.
It was definitely a big production for the BBC in general and as a science fiction thing and basically as a children's program, or more or less a children's program.
And with this children's program, they were pressing ahead for the third series, and the producer, Richard Bates, was working on the plans, and as far as we know, scripts and so on were starting to be prepared. But then in 1984, we had a bit of a sea change at the BBC when Michael Grade became controller of the BBC. A name we've heard before, Brian.
Yes, I think a sea change is the right way to describe it, especially for us as science fiction fans, because Michael Grade did not like science fiction. And he was also sort of pressing down on the budgets. People have described it as being like the accountants taking over at the BBC. And in fact, he put Doctor Who on an 18-month hiatus. At the time, it was not clear that it was just 18 months. This was the end of Doctor Who. And ultimately, there was a lot of backlash, and that was not something they were able to pull off. Doctor Who did come back after 18 months, although Michael Grade did succeed in ending the production and ending Doctor Who some years later in 1989. But right then in 85, there was this change where Doctor Who stopped production for a while. And the Tripods also stopped production. They ended it after Series 2. It was canceled, and there would be no third series and no television adaptation of The Pool of Fire.
Quite a disaster, really, for the cast and crew, Brian.
Yes, the cast and crew were very upset with that. They found out about this as they were finishing up the last couple of episodes on the second series.
That's right, and it caused quite a few damn days for them as they had learnt the news. And it seems that the producer, Richard Bates, was certainly looking around to try and find ways to keep it going, and trying to find if there were alternative production companies who would help him produce the third series. But sadly, that was not to happen either. And so they were faced with having to wrap up the story of the Tripods in the last sort of episode of the second series without getting towards the sort of dramatic events that would take place in the third series. And they had to devise quite a radically different ending to the final episode. And in fact, the last line of the final episode may indeed can be seen as a sort of reference to this shock cancellation. I think, Brian, it's a bit, it echoes to us, doesn't it?
Yes, we won't say what the last line was, but if you watch the tripods and you get to that last line, there's a definite sense that it refers to the behind-the-scenes situation and the fact that there was no third series.
And the cancellation caused, predictably, quite an upset amongst the fans of the show. We know that there were angry letters in the BBC magazine, the Radio Times, from the fans calling for the third series to be made. And of course, we have this sort of cult reputation for the tripods, some of which, in classic British science fiction manner, has to be attributed to its cancellation and the fact that the show was never concluded.
Yes, of course, it's very hard to say, you know, how would its status and its fandom be different if the third series were made? But it definitely is a series that has a cult following. I don't think there's any dispute of that. And I think it's even had a bit of a resurgence in recent years with the DVD releases and websites and things. It, in some ways, has become a little more popular recently even. So it definitely, I think, is fair to say it has this cult status, as a number of other British series do.
But interesting to think about.
Absolutely. And the third series, of course, would have led to a conclusion with the tripods finally being overthrown and would have tracked that third book fairly closely. And as we say, those were the plans, and that last series did not happen.
Yes. They would have seen the return of the character of Henry, who, as we said, was missing for most of the second series as he's off screen elsewhere while Will is adventuring in the city of the tripods.
Yes, it would have had Henry become a much more central character again.
You have a very inefficient single star system. Your planet Earth spins on its axis only once in 24 hours. So for roughly a third of its cycle, any point on the surface is in darkness, starved of the life-giving energy of the sun. That is why you have to sleep.
And masters don't.
We were born under a different system. Our world, called Trion, is fixed at a point between three suns.
So you never have darkness?
A ceaseless supply of sunlight. On Earth, you depend on the conversion of solar energy to food, which you then have to cook and eat three times a day.
You mean you don't need food either? But then how do you get your energy?
Through perpetual transfer.
So we should talk about the good bits and the bad bits from the tripods. Brian, what bits particularly impressed you from this series?
Quite a few things did, actually. I enjoy this series quite a bit. I enjoyed the ongoing story elements, the way that each series, each season was paced out like a novel and had sort of the beginning, middle, and end as a novel would, and in fact the novels did. I thought that was very nice. I liked the fact that you had this sort of historical look to it, but historical with a twist for the first season. And I thought the transition to the sort of more futuristic feel in the second series was also done very well. I liked the look of it in its multiple different looks and how it transitioned from one to the other. I think the scope of storytelling and visuals worked really well for this show.
Certainly it's got, you know, the big budget is all there on screen. We've got these tremendous special effects. We've got the tripods themselves, which although they're limited, I think it says in one of the documentaries that they were limited to about 1 minute per episode on average of the tripods. But the tripod sequences are very well done, aren't they, Brian?
Yes, they did some pretty impressive things with that. I quite liked the shots you had very often in the first season where a tripod would be there, but you wouldn't see the top of it. You'd just see these enormous legs that just reach up out of shot and, you know, way up above everything else that's happening.
And there's also, I particularly like the chase sequences that happen with the tripods, where they are chasing some of the characters through forests. And there's one particular sequence where that's done at night, which was very effective, with the tripods' laser weapons firing and destroying trees. That was very well done, I think.
Yes, that was a very good use of the Quantel paint box effects, where they were bringing in the tripods and doing the weapons fire and that sort of thing.
Although I should say that the tripods' laser weapons are about as accurate as the stormtroopers' rifles in Star Wars. They don't seem to be able to hit anything apart from trees.
In some sequences, it does seem like that, doesn't it?
But we've got this big budget. We've got these better special effects than we were used to at that time on television. I mean, I think certainly the special effects look better than Doctor Who from that period, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. What did you think of the performances in this?
Well, on the whole, they're not bad. We've got three teenage actors in the lead. We've got a slight problem perhaps with Beanpole's French accent, but on the whole, they're not bad at all. And then we've got this very large cast with some very recognisable British TV faces in the cast. So on the whole, I think the performances are good, Brian.
Yes, I rather like them as well. It was a show that took the approach of casting actors who were similar in personality to the characters. So where the actor who played Henry was not the greatest actor at the very beginning and certainly improves as they go along, it worked because he really fit that role. When occasionally he was a little whiny, it sort of worked because it was believable that Henry would be whiny in the same way. So all in all, I think the casting was very good and I enjoyed the performances in it.
Little nod for British Invaders episodes in that we have Peter Halliday showing up towards the end of this the first series, I believe. Peter Halliday, perhaps best known for the main character in A for Andromeda, but he's also been in Doctor Who over the years as well. So it was nice to see him cropping up in another cult show.
Yes, absolutely. Peter Halliday is always entertaining to watch.
Yeah. So there's lots of good stuff in the tripods. What about some of the less good stuff, Brian? Shall I lead off?
Why don't you lead off, Eamon?
Well, we have got a slight problem in that these are quite short books, which they have had to pad out to make a 12 or a 13 episode series. And so I had a problem with some of the pacing and padding in the tripods show, that some of the stuff does seem to drag along quite a bit.
It's very unusual for a novel to be adapted to screen where the novel does not have enough material and they have to add more material to it. And that's exactly what happened with the tripods, especially in the first series, where there was a whole section where they stay with some people and work on a farm for a little while. That was completely additional to what was in the books. I think once they were doing the White Mountains as 13 episodes, adding a whole new section like that probably was a good way of doing it rather than stretching out the sections that were already there. It didn't bother me as much as it bothers some people. I thought the things that they added were okay. You know, I thought it was kind of fun. I enjoyed the little subplots. I enjoyed the fact that it was not rushed, high energy. We have to get to the White Mountains immediately. I liked the fact that it was sort of a little more, this is where we go, where we're going, but we can't do it at breakneck speed. We have to sort of work our way through and do things as we go along. So I thought that worked reasonably well, but I can certainly see that, yes, it was something they were working around, that they had to do this, and it was indeed padding.
Whereas I, on the other hand, thought that some of the interludes, just delayed them getting on with it, and I wanted them to get on with the story. So that in the first series, as you say, there's a French interlude, or in fact there's two French interludes, which seem to drag on for no good reason. And then in the second series, we have the sort of German interlude on the way to the games, and then we have an episode involving a circus, which I felt rather slowed things down a bit again as well. So I really wanted them to get on with the story, and wish they'd reduced some of the padding that they'd introduced along the way.
Yes, I agree that was a flaw, that they did actually allocate too much time to each novel. It didn't bother me as much. I found some of the things they did along the way were kind of charming and were kind of fun little stories. But certainly it is more interesting when they're dealing with the bigger issues and some of the things that were directly from the book.
We've got we've got this sort of familiar trope from children's television, which is the sort of capture, escape and recapture sort of idea, which does happen quite a bit throughout the tripods, with the characters getting into trouble, getting themselves out of trouble, and then getting back into trouble yet again to produce another sort of cliffhanger for an episode.
Yes, absolutely. That was a staple of early Doctor Who for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But yes, you do have some of that here as well. And again, when they were doing these 12 and 13 episode series, that's a lot of TV for one of these short little novels. So I found all in all that this was a pretty solid series. I quite enjoyed it.
Okay. Of course, it does, as we say, have one major problem, which is that they didn't get to finish it, which is obviously one of the biggest sort of shames or problems in the history of this show and the history of British science fiction TV in a way.
Yes, that is, of course, very unfortunate. I think at this point, if you want to get the end of the story, you have to read the books.
What do you think, Beanpole?
I think we can destruct it.
You mean destroy it?
Destroy it,
yes.
I have made a plan. First, we must find that if it is alone, one of us must climb out and to look out of the gully. Like a fat man, the tripod cannot see his feet.
Okay, which brings us into the availability of the books and the DVDs. The Tripod Series 1 was actually released on VHS in 1994. And then again, the first series was released on DVD in 2001, but for some reason not Series 2. And I know that caused quite a degree of consternation amongst fans, until finally, just over a year ago as we record, in 2009, they released the complete series 1 and 2 on a Region 2 DVD release box set, which also includes some extras, one of which is a television program called The Cult of the Tripods, which was a documentary about the making of and the cult that arose from the Tripod series. And that's quite fun to watch, isn't it, Brian?
Yes, it is. It has its ups and downs. In some ways, it's a little too critical, but definitely has some interesting interviews in it. They talked to John Christopher, the original writer who wrote the novels, and it was interesting to hear his comments. He said that he liked what they did with the TV series, although he was disappointed that they had to add things to it. The DVDs also include a music suite by Ken Freeman, which is based on the third book. It's called the Pool of Fire Suite, which is meant to give a musical impression of how Series 3 would have been. And the booklet for the DVD set actually includes a fairly detailed summary of what would have happened in Series 3 and how it was in the book and the few things that were going to be changed a little bit for the TV version. And I felt that the booklet was actually pretty good for giving you, in a summary way, a sort of conclusion and a little bit of closure to this series for what happens in the end.
Okay, so that was a Region 2 DVD release, which is available on Amazon still at the price currently of about £16. And it's also available on the Love Film UK rental site. But in Region 1, Brian?
There is no Region 1 DVD release. So if you want to see this and you're in North America, I think you just have to get a hold of the Region 2 DVD set and use a region-free system for playing that. When it comes to the books, the prequel from 1988, When the Tripods Came, is still in print. The others are not in print, the original trilogy from the 60s. But those books are quite easy to find in secondhand copies, both online and in bookstores, in secondhand bookstores in a lot of places. And there is at least one volume version that includes all three books that's available secondhand. And I have even seen a version that includes all four books that's available here and there. So you should be able to find copies of all four books in one form or another for fairly low cost.
Okay, so the book's reasonably easy to get hold of, as is the Region 2 DVD release. So having told you how you could get hold of this show and watch it, now we have to discuss whether you should get hold of it and watch it, Brian.
Yes, our recommendations. Why don't you start this one, Eamon?
Okay, well, I shall have to tread carefully because I'm aware that we're dealing with a cult show with an enormous number of fans. I didn't watch The Tripods when it first came out, so this is my first encounter with it. And I have to say I have three problems with The Tripods, appropriately, and those problems are pacing, pacing, and pacing. It is rather slow, And I rather wanted them to get on with it. It's got lots to recommend it in terms of the special effects, but I had problems with the length of the two series and how much time the actors or the characters seem to waste on the various interludes, which sort of block them on their journeys to what they were trying to do with the city and the tripods and so on. So my recommendation would be, if you watched it originally in the 80s and are a fan, and then obviously this is a given for you, you'll probably already have the box set. If you haven't seen the tripods before, then I'm not sure if I would direct you straight to it. I think there are other shows that we've covered that I would probably get to first, like, for instance, Children of the Stones, which is shorter and I think probably better than the tripods. So, Brian.
Okay, well, I'm going to recommend this because I really enjoyed it. I recognize there is a pacing issue there, but that didn't bother me so much. I still enjoyed it a lot. I know I tend to enjoy things with slower pacing, and a lot of people prefer things that are a little quicker. But I would say, if you enjoy things that have a little bit slower pacing, and if you like sort of interesting children's sci-fi television, and you like that era, then this is something that is well worth watching. I really quite enjoyed it. I think watching an episode or two a day over a period of a couple weeks or a month or so makes this a very entertaining show that has some nice little stuff. I enjoy it quite a bit, so I will recommend it. It's worth picking up as long as you know what you're getting into, that yes, the overall story is a little bit slow in its pacing.
Okay, so it's one thumb up and one thumb down from British Invaders this time. And as ever, we're looking for you to jump in on the discussion group on the Facebook page. And if you want to join the thread there and give us your views and perhaps have the casting vote yet again on the tripods.
Absolutely, please let us know. So, in summary, The Tripods was a 1980s sci-fi series that in two seasons adapted the first two novels of a trilogy about enormous three-legged robot tripods that ruled the world through the process of capping, that took away people's initiative and maybe some of their individuality in order to remove human conflict and wars, and also removed all inventiveness. And the story dealt with three or four teenagers going up against the tripods, first trying to escape them and going to a group of resistance free men who are not capped and stand against the tripods, and then moving to infiltrate the tripods in their own city and hopefully to eventually overthrow the tripods themselves. Which, of course, happens in the third book that was not adapted as a TV series.
Okay, an interesting show with some great special effects. Please let us know if you've watched it or if you're going to watch it as a result of our review.
It does have some good dramatic moments and things as well as the special effects.
It does. So, please join us next time when we will be discussing a show called The Day After Tomorrow, which was also known as Into Infinity. And this was a rare Gerry Anderson foray into live action. It comes from 1975. And we'll be talking about that show and some of its features and how you can get to watch it next month.
That's a show that is very different from almost anything else I've seen. So it'll be an interesting one to talk about.
And a bit of a rarity.
Yes, absolutely. So you can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you go to Facebook and search for British Invaders, you will find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and we look forward to your company next time. Until then, this is Eamon from England saying goodbye.